Stéphane Gerson is an award-winning historian of modern France and the author of Nostradamus, How an Obscure Renaissance Astrologer Became the Modern Prophet of Doom. He teaches French history at New York University and joins us on this morning of December 21st to discuss the end of the world as we know it, and can we still feel fine at the end of it? Stéphane Gerson, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Give us a sense of your interest in Nostradamus, of how this came to be, and how ultimately this figure, this man, came to signify doom and our demise.
I got interested in Nostradamus after 9/11. I was living in downtown New York at the time with my family. These were difficult times. And I noticed how many people got interested in Nostradamus. It was all over the internet. More people searched for Nostradamus that year online than searched for Osama bin Laden. And I just got—I was kind of struck by this. I was not myself interested in Nostradamus before this, but I got intrigued. I mean, who was this guy Nostradamus? I didn't know much about him. What do we know about his prophecies? And how did these kind of 16th century prophecies endure over time and become something permanent in our Western world? So that's how the book began.
There is a Penguin Classic edition of The Prophecies of Nostradamus. And you asked the question very early on of a classic edition of Nostradamus. At what point did we start to accept him as being this prophet and be able to look at it as both serious work and also literature in some sense?
These are two different questions. I mean, he was seen as a prophet in his own time, but before being that, Nostradamus was very much a part of a man of his world. He was a man of the Renaissance. He was born in southern France. He was a doctor. He was a plague doctor. For many years, he practiced medicine. He traveled. Then he settled down in a town called Salon-de-Provence, and he started writing horoscopes that he would sell to people from Italy, Germany, France. And then eventually, late in his life, I mean, almost 50 years old, he started publishing. Publishing was really taking off in Europe, and he started publishing almanacs about the year to come, signed Nostradamus. And then these made him even more famous. And then in 1555, he wrote the prophecies, this collection of poetic quatrains that then magnified his fame and have endured over time. So the history of Nostradamus, to some extent, is the history of a book as well. The second part of your question, they've rarely been seen as true poetry, as true literature. If you go back, you know, over the centuries, they're not part of canons. They're not taught in schools. Nostradamus has not been deemed as a great Renaissance poet at a time in which there were a number of impressive poets. The only writers who really went to Nostradamus at some point were avant-garde writers, members of the Dada school, who saw him as a kind of a forerunner of a kind of a subversive avant-garde poetry. But really, until recently, most literary scholars would not look at Nostradamus.
It seems to me that in the history, and for those who look at these prophecies, that we can draw correlations and say, well, Nostradamus predicted this. And is there such a vague sense that we can pretty much put anything into that rubric and say, okay, yes, he predicted that Justin Bieber would have a number one album on the Billboard charts.
Right. I mean, that's one way people look at it. They say, well, you know, he wrote so many verses, 942 quatrains that are so vague, so cryptic. Even in his own era, people said he's the most cryptic of writers, that anything can be read into it. There are only 8 dates in the whole book. And that is true to an extent. But I think there's more to it. I think he wrote a text of tremendous power, tremendous density. Nostradamus was a person who traveled across Europe during times of tremendous change, wars of religion between Catholics and Protestants, plague epidemics, famine, rapid social change. And he had his finger on the pulse of these changes, of this uncertainty, of the anxieties of his time. And he managed to capture this in these very dense, poetic, very forceful quatrains. So I think that there's a way in which the text kind of captured people's anxieties. He captured the emotions. He spoke about what people felt, but which they could not really put into words as well.
So when it comes to December 21st and this end of the world notion of 12/21/12, yeah. Where does that come from?
It does not come from Nostradamus, even though he's linked to it today. But that's happened again and again. Nostradamus has become almost like a brand for doom in the 19th and 20th century, and has been linked to other things. Where it comes from is that in the 50s and 60s, some interpreters of the Mayan calendar believed that it indicated that at this date would be the end of a world of some catastrophe. In fact, specialists of Mayan civilization will tell you that that's not the case at all, that the Mayan did not have any kind of vision of end of times. On the contrary, they had a cyclical view of times. And they had these cycles, these 5,126, I think, year cycles. And one of these cycles is coming to an end, according to some Mayan scholars, this Friday. But the end is always a beginning. It's always it's never an end. It's always restarting again. So for the Maya, this is not seen as the end of the world anyway. But these interpreters, these people sort of saw it as more of a kind of a Western view of the end of times. And then this kind of percolated into the 80s and 90s, into recent decades, linking with more apocalyptic visions of the end of times, but also into New Age currents. In 1987, there was an important book that came out that kind of linked the Maya, that kind of recovered the Maya as a lost civilization whose wisdom could teach us to kind of a new consciousness, and teach us that 12/2012 was about learning that we're going about in a bad direction through our dependence on fossil fuels, through our pollution, through our disregard for the planet, and that we're going towards deep perdition. And if we go back to the Maya, we can kind of regain a consciousness about some kind of ecological sensitivity that could save the world. So there was both a positive take on the Maya and a kind of a call to arms, a call to consciousness as well.
So give us a sense of how Nostradamus then has figured into this and became linked to it. And then I will ask you, I'll let you answer that, and then I will ask you about Nostradamus and his thoughts specifically on the end of the world and doom. But let us begin with how he got connected with this Mayan tradition and look at things.
So my understanding is that, I mean, when I started this research, you know, around 2003, 2004, I mean, I had never heard of the Mayan calendar. Certainly, it's not something Nostradamus ever wrote about. I mean, he probably didn't even know about the Maya. It started appearing, I started becoming aware of it around 2007, 2008. And really, I think it came out of certain media, mostly on cable TV, the channels like the History Channel and National Geographic channels. And what they did is that, we've seen this happen again and again over the centuries, is that Nostradamus has become this kind of brand, this name that is attached to something else as a way to connote mysterious origins, to connote anxiety, to connote fear about some cataclysmic future. So it's kind of a mechanism that we've seen happening in the media. In 1886, to just give you an example, there was another big fear about the end of the world in Europe and in the U.S. as well. Mm-hmm. It was some kind of prediction had supposedly appeared on the marble table in Germany. And right away, people linked it to Nostradamus, although it was not Nostradamus's. And if you read the newspapers in Paris, in London, in New York, in Iowa City, I mean, all over. I mean, I found all kinds of articles, and they're linking to Nostradamus because it gives a certain aura that was missing, perhaps initially.
And what does Nostradamus have to say about the end?
Well, if you read the prophecies, I mean, he says that the end of the world is not going to come to until 3,197. So we're fine for now. He was living in apocalyptic old times. As I said, there were tremendous changes, tremendous anxieties, and so these Christian visions of the apocalypse were very much part of people's mental frameworks. It was part of his as well. Was he more apocalyptic than others? Probably not. But the force of his language, the darkness perhaps of his language, resonated with people. And so some people latched onto it. But if you look at the way people have read Nostradamus into the 17th, the 18th, 19th century, sure, some people saw focus on the apocalypse, but plenty of people did not. Plenty of people looked at Nostradamus after an event, the fire of London, the French Revolution, and looked at it as a way to make sense of this event, make way of situating in a broader framework, perhaps to feel part of a broader community, or to feel that what they were going through was part of some kind of world historical event. And it's really into the 19th century, into our own 20th century, that this kind of focus on the apocalypse has become much more prevalent, and perhaps because Nostradamus endures now mostly in certain kind of mass media that have focused on this.
Stefan Gerson is our guest this morning. The name of the book, Nostradamus, How an Obscure Renaissance Astrologer Became the Modern Prophet of Doom, and the book is published by St. Martin's Press. Stefan has also written the introduction to Nostradamus, The Prophecies from Penguin Classics. As you mentioned, there are so few dates in the prophecies that even 97, mm-hmm. That's pretty specific.
Right. There are eight exact dates. Even people will argue about that, for instance. They'll say, well, is 3,197 the end of the world, or is it the end of a world? Is it kind of, a call to consciousness, and it's going to reform our ways? I mean, certainly Nostradamus was upset about what he was seeing in his own times. I mean, he was seeing, people forgetting their place in society. The elites were no longer taking care of the poor, and the poor, the peasants, perhaps were becoming too ambitious. And so he was kind of channeling that kind of sense of dissatisfaction into a warning about, kind of reforming one's ways. So people have been debating exactly what he meant in his own time, and they still do today.
Talk to us a little bit about the science that he used, and because most of this comes from astrology. It's not philosophy, it's astrology. So that science and what he is basing this much of these dates and these prophecies come from what belief and what scientific belief?
Right. In his own time, as I said, Nostradamus was a doctor, and doctors were often astrologers. I mean, consulting, looking at the stars and the positions of the planets was a way to understand their impact on the body as well. So there was nothing unusual about the fact that he would look at the stars and calculate their position to better give diagnostics to his patients. So writing horoscopes by getting the dates when people were born and the place where they were born, and then producing information about what lay ahead for them in the year to come, which he did from his home. Supposedly he had, according to the story we've been told, he had an observatory on the top floor of his home. Was very much standard procedure. It was accepted by a lot of people. I mean, there were court astrologers at the time. There was nothing unusual about that. And so when people went to see an astrologer, they were trying to get information that they could use to plan ahead. It was kind of a mix between a therapist and a financial planner who would tell you, when to buy land, when to enter into a new profession. He mixed this kind of technical skill of astrology with this kind of social, this empathy with prophecy. And prophecy was different. Prophecy was not so much about calculation. It was more about having some kind of vision. And he talks in the introduction to the prophecy, he talks about the kind of visions he has at night, the illuminations he has at night. He's very careful not to come across as the equal of a biblical prophet. He says, I am not really a prophet. But at the same time, he's writing the prophecy. So he's being careful. He's savvy. He doesn't want to get in trouble with the authorities. He doesn't want to get in trouble with the church, but he's mixing both astrology and prophecy in this very powerful combination.
As you mentioned early on, he was seen as a prophet during his own time. So at what point, what was the reaction, even when he was talking in his current day?
So he was seen as a prophet and as an astrologer. He was seen as both until the end of his life. By the time he died, he was an international celebrity. People knew of Nostradamus all over Europe, not only in France, where he was from, but also, as I said, in Germany, in England. People said that he was famous for being famous. They call him the famous Nostradamus because of his almanacs, mostly. These almanacs that spread all over Europe that were so famous that people were imitating them. They were creating their own Nostradamus almanacs. It almost was becoming a prophet, a Nostradamus, but also because of his prophecies. And one event that kind of crystallized this fame was the death of King Henry II, the French king, in 1559. He died in a jousting tournament. Even before he died, there were warnings and people were going to Nostradamus and other astrologers, including his wife, Catherine of Medici, who was surrounded by astrologers and who was very much devoted to Nostradamus. And he does die in 1559. He dies during this jousting tournament. And right away, people go towards the prophecies. They go to his predictions. And they find that magnifies his fame. Catherine of Medici then visits Nostradamus 5 years later. She goes to his town of Salon-Provence to get prognostications about her own sons. So there was a lot of interest, a lot of fascination with Nostradamus, who was believed to have predicted the death of the king. That was a major event. But there was a lot of controversy as well. There was a lot of jealousy by other astrologers. So by the time he died, he was not only famous, but also infamous. There were people criticizing, writing pamphlets against him, calling him Monstradamus, as if he was some kind of monstrous figure who was just too popular and dangerous as well.
And has that manifested itself over time and through the centuries into our, for some of us, a criticism and a look at astrology as basically a parlor trick?
Absolutely. I think that what I call the Nostradamus phenomenon and this endurance of Nostradamus over time, it's not only about a text, it's not only about people who've been seduced by it or attracted to it. It's also about people who've rebelled against it, who've pushed against it, and who've denounced Nostradamus. And you see it in his lifetime, and every century afterwards has had its critics of Nostradamus. But what's really interesting is how in every century, when people criticize Nostradamus, they're criticizing something different. And what they mean by Nostradamus changes, and it captures their own anxieties. So in the 16th and 17th century, people criticize Nostradamus, the man. They criticize the false prophet, the bad astrologer, the charlatan. By the 18th century, people don't care about the man anymore. They can relegate him to the kind of the dark Middle Ages or whatever. But what they're concerned about is superstition. They're concerned about the kind of the masses, the peasantry and others buying this kind of stuff. And that's what they criticize Nostradamus. They criticize the illiterate masses who still believe this in a rational age. By the 19th century, when the market is taking off, when people are selling this stuff, when interpreters are becoming famous by exploiting Nostradamus, people are criticizing the interpreters themselves, the modern Nostradamus, who himself or herself is becoming famous by exploiting Nostradamus. And then more recently, after the Second World War, the time of the Cold War, and into the 1980s and 90s, what people criticize is kind of a civilizational decline, a loss of bearings, and a kind of a civilization of fear that kind of percolates into the souls of individuals and corrupts them from within.
As a scholar in the subject of Nostradamus, what should we take, do you think, if we read these prophecies, what should we take? What do you think the average reader should take from them?
Good question. First of all, I think it's a text of powerful force. There's a certain beauty to it. There's a rhythm to it. And I think if you immerse yourself in this text, I mean, you can get into the mind of a person, but you really get back into an age, the Renaissance age, but an age that has endured to some extent as well. I think that what you also get is appreciation for the force of this of these words, but also for their endurance over time. It's also about history. It's about our history. It's about the appeal of these words during times of change, during times of uncertainty, when our own authorities, religions, or science, or politicians don't seem reputable anymore. The appeal of these kind of words, how they create a sense of community, a sense of being in time, how they give a language to people's afflictions, their fears, their anxieties. Something very powerful about that was about our history, which is still with us today as well.
So if I'm reading you right, we'll make it through the show and we'll have to finish this up and we may even have a happy holiday in the process.
I've made dinner reservations for Saturday.
Okay, all right. So you feel safe from that. And with that said, and our final word on this is, it seems like even how people read this, and obviously we're still here tomorrow. People will still look at Nostradamus and say, all right, and look at the next thing.
Yeah, I think there are two ways of looking at what Nostradamus says about us today, why is it still with us today. You know, you can have the more critical take and say, well, you know, it shows how the media are being sensationalistic, certain media, how they're exploiting our fears. So that's part of it. That's part of the world in which we live. Perhaps we do live in a world in which everything is filtrated through fears. The more optimistic way to look at it is that people will still gravitate to these words because they say something meaningful about their world, because at some point in their lives, they find these words resonating because they enable them to create a sense of self, a sense of community, and that they give them a sense of where they're going in the world. So I don't think that's too scary, personally.
Stefan Gerson is the author of the book Nostradamus, How an Obscure Renaissance Astrologer Became the Modern Prophet of Doom. The book is published by St. Martin's Press. He also has written the introduction to the Penguin Classics edition of Nostradamus, The Prophecies. And he is Associate Professor of French Studies at New York University. Stefan Gerson, thank you very much for joining us today and for all of the days forward. I thank you very much and wish you all the luck in the world.
Thank you for having me.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Again, Stefan Gerson has written the introduction to the Penguin Classics edition of Nostradamus, The Prophecies, as well as the new book from St. Martin's Press, Nostradamus, How an Obscure Renaissance Astrologer Became the Modern Prophet of Doom. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.